Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, rumor has it the Bills played a game today. I watched it all. I did not enjoy much of it, not because I really cared if the Bills won or not. It was really, you know, it was a go through the exercise of getting through this game as healthy as possible. But the Bills did end up losing, and there was a joke during the Bills playoff drought that any team that lost to the Bills would go on and fire their coach. Well, this time a team beats the Bills and they immediately fire their coach. The Patriots cost themselves the number one overall draft pick with this win. The Bills have their playoff opponents set. We know when that game's going to be. We know the entire AFC bracket. We're going to spend a lot more time on that than the ins and outs of the Patriots game that happened today. But before I get there, Luca, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Yeah. I did something today on a football Sunday that I tried to think back if there was ever a time I had done it before, and I genuinely cannot remember one. I ran errands during football on a football Sunday. It was an experience. I had told the missus that there was a time where Liverpool was no longer playing Man U, and the 1 o'clock games did not matter so much that I just needed to make sure I came home for the 4 o'clock games just to see how this Kansas City Denver game broke down. So yes, let's go out and do whatever the couple things we need to do and get those things taken care of. That sounds great. And I'll be honest, Josh, it felt pretty good. Felt weird. I didn't forget about the game. I just knew that I didn't care. And obviously, like most Bills fans, I was honestly hoping for a loss. And when I had noticed that Joe Milton was brought into the game to duel Mitch Trubisky, whether the coaches will admit it or not, that was a lose-off. That was who can lose this game. And Joe Milton, all respect to him, was not feeling that. He wanted to show that he can actually play.
Yeah.
Respect to Joe Milton.
Yeah.
he's a competitor just like anyone on that field in general, both sides of the ball. You're a player. You play to play the game, and generally you want to win, but realistically, the result did not matter for the Bills at all. And then the fact that the Patriots win, it almost is like a little bit of a tip of the cap knife dig all at the same time from the Bills to the Patriots. Hey, remember that first overall pick you had in your back pocket? That thing's gone. You're now fourth overall. Congrats. You lost a ton of value with where you're sitting there. Have fun with the rebuild. We'll be over here as the 2 seed enjoying another playoff run. It felt like a classic role reversal, Josh.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the team on the other side's been pretty set for weeks now. This is the game you just got to go through the motions and make it through healthy. And then here we are kind of playing our game already with an eye on the draft, and all of a sudden winning that game kind of screws you over just a little bit for them, a little bit more than even in our positions. Normally, I don't think we really even sniffed a first overall pick, of course, during that time. So it was an interesting one. And that's really about it. I mean, I've seen tweets out there about how Ray Davis looked good and stuff like that. And it's like, that's all fine and dandy and all, but it was a glorified preseason game, and I'm glad I didn't really spend much time watching it.
So I don't want to assume that everybody that's listening to our show fully understands why Luca was rooting for the Patriots. So what I'm going to do now, Luca, I'm going to spend like 2 or 3 minutes just recapping the game, why it doesn't matter, and then we can kind of talk about big picture stuff. So the reason why Luca was rooting for the Patriots, the reason why I was rooting for the Patriots, is the Bills were locked and loaded into the 2 seed today. Nothing they could have done would have impacted their playoff seeding. And Sean McDermott had announced earlier in the week that Josh Allen would start, with the sole purpose in mind of extending his consecutive start streak, which he now leads all active quarterbacks by more than double. The next closest, I believe, is Jared Goff. And he did that. He played one singular play, and then he got out of the game. And then as far as the rest of this game goes, the reason why Luca and I were both rooting for the Patriots is, to what Luca's point was, the Patriots came into this game with the number one overall draft pick in their pocket. All they had to do was find a way to lose this game. And they didn't. And now they're picking fourth. And you can say what you want to about this draft class. Maybe it's not as sexy as the draft class before, but the number one pick is an asset. And whether you have Drake May and you don't need a quarterback, which they almost certainly do not, you can always trade down. And this is a team that is just desperate for assets. So it cost them a lot of value. What did you miss if you didn't see the game today? Okay, well, Mitch Trubisky came in. He was solid. the Bills very much today, their goal was to hit incentives in guys' contracts. On the first drive of the game, Von Miller got a sack on Drake May. He was out of the game. Von Miller needed one sack to, I believe, hit $1 million incentive. He could have gotten a couple more million if he had had a couple more sacks, but they yanked him out of the game. James Cook on the first drive of the game got the 19 yards he needed to get over 1,000 yards. Much to my shock, Luca, the announcers on TV said that the Bills had told them that they were very interested in getting James Cook 2 rushing touchdowns today to make him the all-time single-season rushing touchdown leader for the Buffalo Bills, passing O.J. Simpson. That did not happen, but they did on their first touchdown, which was a pass in the flat to Ray Davis. They tried 3 different times to hand the ball to James Cook, and he couldn't get in before ultimately throwing it to Davis. And then Cook went off. He had already gotten 1,000. He was on the sideline. He was out of my mind at that point in time. And then on the next touchdown drive, which was in the third quarter, Mitch Trubisky, I think, could have scored on a read option. And this should tell you everything you need to know about this game. He could have scored. He dove down at the 1 yard line, gave himself up at the 1 yard line. Maybe he didn't want to take contact. It looked like he had a clear path. Pops right up and starts mouthing to the sideline, James Cook, James Cook. James Cook, who's been sitting on the sideline now for an hour and a half, puts his helmet on, comes in, and gets a 1 yard touchdown run. So the Bills dodged a bullet, if you want to say that. They didn't get James Cook hurt. The Bills also got Sam Martin his incentive for a number of punts inside the 20 yard line. McDermott punted from inside the 40, which is way unlike him. Good on Sean McDermott. The guys that didn't even play today, Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown, Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, Amari Cooper didn't even make the trip. They're calling it personal reasons. I don't think there's any reason to be too overly concerned about that. Greg Rousseau didn't dress for this game. Christian Benford didn't dress for this game. Rasul Douglas was in for like 2 drives, and I'm tweeting out from our account, why is Rasul Douglas still in the game? He sat for Luca's favorite cornerback, Brandon Codrington, for the rest of the game. But all in all, I think the biggest takeaway from this game is, one, I applaud the Bills for doing the smart thing. I think it's a conversation if you have a bye, whether you want to have 2 full weeks of rest. But the Bills were certainly in position, especially when you look at how their seasons had fallen apart in previous years, to take advantage of this. And I thought they handled it perfectly. You know, I didn't care as much about James Cook getting that one touchdown to tie O.J. Simpson. That wasn't anything that was really on my radar as far as like my fandom goes, but good for him if it was important to him. I thought Sean McDermott handled it very smartly, making sure that key players got in. Damar Hamlin played a lot, but that makes sense because he hadn't played in the last month. Taylor Rapp was playing in the third quarter, but again, a guy that up until last week hadn't played for about a month. Do you want to get those guys ramped up for the playoffs? And then, you know, your receivers today were basically Curtis Samuel, Mac Collins, and Keon Coleman all day long. Khalil Shakir didn't even get a target. But all in all, I think the biggest story from like an X's and O's perspective, honestly, is what Luca mentioned before. Joe Milton, he looks like a gamer to me. He's got good mobility, made some good plays on the run. But before we get past this game, Luca, I don't understand anything about how the Patriots manage this game. If I'm the Patriots, okay, and we've been here. 2018, we had Josh Allen. And we didn't have the number one pick in our sights. That's the difference. But 2018, we had Josh Allen. I buy a ticket to this game. I know there's nothing on the line, but I get to see our future quarterback. Every time he's on the field is like a glimpse into the future. Every time he's playing, it's experience. You're telling me Drake May couldn't benefit from taking all the snaps today? And Joe Milton did just fine. They won the game. And maybe, to Luca's point, maybe they were trying to give themselves the best odds of losing, which I guess I would applaud. But Drake May getting the Josh Allen treatment of coming in for one drive and then saying adios made no sense to me for a team that came into today's game with 3 wins and had a rookie quarterback that they already sat for the first quarter and a half of the season because they wanted to pretend like Jacoby Brissett was the best option. And now you just threw away another game of experience that he could have had NFL speed, NFL action. I don't understand that. I don't understand a lot about what the Patriots did. They ultimately fired Jerod Mayo shortly after this game ended. A lot of talk now that Mike Vrabel is going to get this job. What did you think about Drake May getting the quick hook in this game?
I'm with you on this point, right? if you're the Patriots, you are trying to do one of two things with this game. You are trying to do everything in your power to lose it, to make sure you secure the number one overall pick and you get through it. And also, and or however you want to do it, you want to still show the fans Drake May. You want to show it off. You want to show that there's a reason to still be a fan. You'll have your super loyalists, like your Dave Portnoy's of the world, who came out right after, hey, everything's okay. Everything's fine. This is good. Everything that's happening is good. You know, we're good. All that kind of stuff. But your individuals who aren't necessarily as accustomed to it, maybe not as committed to being a fan and are kind of loose in their fandom, would see what took place today and just be disappointed with everything in my eyes, because you didn't get the result you needed or wanted, being a loss. And then on top of it, your coaching staff, your organization, everything, the message was clearly not there, where it's like, hey, what are you resting Drake May for? You can give the argument of like, hey, we're making sure he doesn't get hurt. Doesn't injuries are injuries and they're never good, but right.
Then why, like, even start?
Right. Why even start in the first place? I don't comprehend the kind of dipping a toe in everything. Like, you either fully commit to the bit being, you know, hey, we're trying to lose this game. Joe, you know, we're going to give Joe Milton some reps and just see how it goes. And Drake May, you're in street clothes. And or Drake May, let's go show these fans. Let's go out there, have a little bit of fun, throw it around, see what you can do. It could turn into what looked like the Chargers game, but who cares? Like, even the Chargers game, there were certain times and moments that someone could look at it as a Patriots fan and be like, if Drake May had an offensive line, if Drake May had some better receiving weapons, he could be something. You didn't really give anything to anyone, and the management of all of the decisions needed to be made in this game just were head scratching, to be quite honest. Again, I didn't really watch how it all broke down play by play. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy that I didn't.
You didn't miss much.
The one takeaway I had is I did see the report of James Cook running in that 1 yard touchdown, and I instantly was like, why is James Cook in this game right now? Like, mm-hmm. That made no sense. So I'm glad, by the way, Josh, you gave context to it, because I was extremely confused and a little frustrated with the whole fact, but that makes a lot more sense. And overall, when it comes to the Patriots, sitting here as a Bills fan, it makes me laugh, but also at the same time, I do think what they're doing as a football fan makes a lot of sense, because Jerod Mayo, he doesn't look like he belongs at all. He has no idea what he's doing, yeah, to be quite frank. And you have a Patriot of Patriot, you know, the Patriot way, a staple of all those, the original dynasty, Mike Vrabel, who has already proven that he can actually be a real coach in this league, sitting there on the couch right now. The writing felt like it was on the wall when we heard the rumors a few weeks ago. It's like, if things aren't going well with Jerod Mayo right now, hey, you got Mike Vrabel to turn to. I wonder if it's a little awkward being that they were teammates at one point, but overall, if I were just a football fan, and thank God I'm not a Patriots fan, but if I was a Patriots fan, I would actually be happy with this move. And you saw Fire Mayo signs in the stadium. I saw some pictures on Twitter of that. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. And this game and how it was managed and the personnel decisions and everything we're discussing here kind of reflects on just the inability to do anything right for this team this season, that it's not unprecedented that an organization kind of bails after 1 year either. You know, Steve Wilks with the Cardinals pops in mind in 2018 after a terrible year with Josh Rosen at the helm. Just makes me laugh every time I hear it. They did end up with the first overall pick, by the way, as their reward, not the fourth overall pick. So fun fact with that one. It's going to be a beautifully long rebuild in my eyes for Patriot world. And this game just exemplified how mismanaged everything is. And also just kind of points back at how finely tuned the Belichick regime was and understanding how to handle things, how to manage things. It may have not finished great with Belichick even, but you never questioned the decisions of the coaching staff, of the upper management. It all made sense. And clearly now post Belichick, they need to bring back structure, because what all took place today was very odd from a football perspective.
You know, they there's a lot of conversation about Jerod Mayo was done wrong. And I guess I understand that, like, nobody had any expectations for this Patriots team. They only won four games. But I think you have to look under the hood, as we like to say. And there were multiple instances this year where Jerod Mayo just messed up the press conference, where, you know, the media would ask him about certain decisions he made punting late in games. And he would say, "We've won a lot of championships around here playing that way." And my phone is just talking to me, apparently. It's like, yeah, okay. And technically he was a player on the team, but, you know, you're the head coach now. And those are Bill Belichick championships. You got to be careful when you say "we" there. You're the guy following the guy, which is never the best place to be anyway. But, you know, that was tricky. And then you just saw some really outdated strategies, right? Jerod Mayo, situations where he wouldn't go for two late in game, situations where he punted at, you know, 35-yard line. It didn't seem like that he was necessarily on the cutting edge of where football really is going here in 2025, particularly with a quarterback like what Drake May looks like he could be. So I understand where they're coming from. And, you know, there's a lot of chatter out there that, yes, it seems like Mike Vrabel is an easy person to slot in there. But when you look at some of these open jobs, Luca, Drake May might be the most appealing quarterback of all the quarterbacks that are available. I feel like the Jaguars are kind of like their own separate conversation. Trevor Lawrence has already been paid. I don't know that people really still view him as somebody that can be in that upper echelon. He's kind of like Kirk Cousins-ish to me, where he's okay, he's good, but I don't know if you're always thinking that he's one of the best. And then you also have to understand that you're giving up a home game every year to play in London. You're playing two games in London every year. That can wear on you. The other teams, you're talking about Dallas, which is its own, you know, its own situation where everything you do just has to come through the Jones family. So you're never going to be the face of that team. The Bears have Caleb Williams, but I mean, if the draft were to be reheld today, and I was a big Caleb Williams guy, it feels like Drake May would go ahead of Caleb Williams. You know, you start looking at some of these openings, unless another one pops up that we're not expecting. I feel like just looking at quarterbacks, and then Robert Kraft does have a good resume of winning. It feels like maybe this Patriots job could be attractive, understanding that this is a heavy lift. This is a roster void of a lot of talent right now, especially on the offensive weapons side of things. So for me, if I were a Patriots fan, as appealing as Mike Vrabel would be, Luca, I'd be looking at someone like Ben Johnson, an offensive mind, to come in and really build this whole thing around Drake May and be somebody in that room when it's draft night, pounding the table for weapons and guys that can score touchdowns, because that's drastically missing. They are a team that traded away from Ladd McConkey in this draft and got Jalen Polk and Javon Baker.
There's a lot to go in with that. And to simply put it, I think the Patriots right now, if we're trying to have a conversation about this, are kind of showing where the Patriots are another example of the NFL being a boys club. That's what it is. And everything you said makes sense. And I'm not going to get too long winded in this, because obviously we want to talk about the Bills.
Yeah.
But simply put, I think the Vrabel discussion is truly there just because that is who ownership Robert Kraft is comfortable with. And because he's available and he's part of the boys club, that is the New England Patriots and the NFL. That is why they're going to bring him in. That is why ultimately it's going to happen. I think Vrabel wants it to happen. I think Robert Kraft wants it to happen. The writing has been on the wall, as I said previously, and it's, there's the reason you see what you see in Dallas all the time with Jerry Jones. There's a reason you see all of these situations. Be very happy that the Bills, in my opinion, lucked out getting McDermott and Bean. Very, very lucky. And thank your lucky stars. Those are the two people making decisions for this team, because you have other situations out there like the Cowboys and like the Patriots, like we're talking about, where they almost can't get out of their own way and they're trying to, you know, do what's comfortable to them in this boys club. And they're just going to keep recycling or kind of going to the next option that they're happy with, themselves, not necessarily thinking big picture on what can actually help the team and organization, but instead what they would be more willing to pay and be happy with being in the office day in, day out and seeing run their team. So Robert Kraft, in my opinion, would be much happier seeing a Mike Vrabel, who is a friendly face and reminds him of the good old days, than a Ben Johnson, as you said, who might be able to transform the team, build it up around Drake May, and actually create a new culture and regime in New England. That's the reality of the NFL in my eyes, and it's why you see even the Colts situation, where the Irsay ownership is just not willing to depart with their longtime GM at this point that really hasn't shown that he's capable of being a top quality GM and has been called out for it at this point. And it's a boys club. The NFL is a boys club, and be there very thankful that at least, you know, a lot can be said about the ownership of the Bills when it comes to another professional team that they own, but at least for the Bills' sake, they have the right people in place to run the team, make the decisions that need to be made to continue to be successful year in, year out.
So the Bills-Patriots game left a lot to be desired from like an actual football standpoint. The Bills did take the loss for whatever that's worth. They finished 13-4 on the season. But all was not lost today, because when the 4 p.m. slate kicked off, 4:25 to be exact, that's when the real action happened. With the Bengals beating the Steelers on Saturday, it really came down to, and for those of us that were on this train, we weren't all in agreement here, but it felt like, Luca, the majority of the fan base agreed that it's not that the Bills are afraid of the Bengals, but path of least resistance, the way Burrow and Chase were cooking down the stretch, 5-game winning streak, if we can avoid that team, and the biggest thing that the Bills are going to have over any team that comes to Orchard Park outside of Ravens is they're going to have a cheat code at quarterback, and the opponent the Bills have is not. Ravens or the Bengals have that cheat code. Let's avoid the Bengals. To have that happen today, we had to root on the Kansas City Chiefs backups to go to Denver and lose a game, and lose it they did, 38-0. And now, Luca, the Bills will be playing the Denver Broncos at 1 p.m. Eastern on CBS. The rest of the AFC playoff bracket is as follows. The Kansas City Chiefs are the one seed. They get a bye on Saturday before the Bills and Broncos kick off. The other two AFC games will happen. You have the 4-5 seed, the Chargers visiting the Texans, and then you have the 3-6 seed, which is the Steelers visiting the Ravens. Let's talk about this Broncos matchup, Luca. I think when you started to project forward a few weeks ago, there were really only a few teams that the Bills could get matched up with. It was Broncos, Chargers, and then there were some, and Colts, and then there were some outside chances where the Bengals or Dolphins could sneak in there. I always thought this Broncos team was an ideal matchup for the Bills. And I realize, okay, there's going to be somebody out there that raises their hand and says, don't take the Broncos lightly. Me saying this is not taking them lightly. This is the NFL playoffs. I assume that every team that is in this tournament is here because on some level they are good, unless they happen to be just the best mediocre team of their mediocre division, which is not the case here with the Broncos. They have an excellent defense. They have, for my money, I want to make sure here, the best cornerback in the sport in Pat Surtain. They have a very good pass rush. They have a very good defensive line. They have interesting weapons on the offensive side of the ball. Cortland Sutton is not in that elite class of receivers, but he's in that next tier, I think probably in a similar tier to a guy like Amari Cooper. And then down their depth chart at wide receiver, they have Vele, who has great hands. They have Marvin Mims Jr., who is a speed demon, who they've really started to get involved more recently. Their running backs kind of leave a little bit to be desired. Their quarterback is a rookie, but he has great athleticism. He has a really strong arm. And you start looking at this team and you could start to scare yourself like, oh, wow, they can do this. They can do that. They can do this. Why I say this is the best possible matchup for the Bills, understanding that there are good qualities about this Broncos team, Luca, is one, Sean McDermott has almost a flawless resume against rookie quarterbacks. That dates all the way back to 2017 when he became the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. Two, I don't think a defense exists that can shut down the Bills. I could be proven wrong on Sunday, and I will take my medicine in that. But I think this Bills offense, when they are clicking, when there's not outside factors beyond their control, like 50-mile-an-hour winds, which I don't even know for sure would shut down the Bills, I think this Bills team can go out there and score 25 to 30 points on any defense and can score 40 points on their best day, maybe not against every defense, but against most. So when I see a team like the Broncos, whose calling card is defense, that doesn't scare me as much as a team like the Bengals or a team like the Dolphins when they're healthy and firing all cylinders that can come in here and score 30 points on the Bills and force the Bills to have an A game offensively. I don't believe the Broncos are going to be able to force the Bills to have an A game offensively. I think a best case scenario for these Broncos is scoring in the 20s. So then I need the Bills to find a way to get to the 30s. And I think that's very likely. So I sit here today feeling very good about this matchup, respecting the fact that this is a quality football team, Luca, coming to Orchard Park next Sunday.
Simply put, I think the tail end of your argument and everything is exactly where my head's at. If you are the Bills and you are playing a team, you want to be sure that you're playing a team that can't kind of step up in a shootout. That's your ideal situation. And when you look at the Broncos, you know, their best defensive lineman, it's kind of up for debate. Zach Allen's had a pretty good year, former Cardinal, just shout out him. You know, they're okay, but they're not dominant on the pass rush, but they're known for their defense. And they're not exactly, did they put up a lot of points today? Yes. But as it's been well indicated, against a lot of maybe not regulars for the Chiefs.
Boy, did the Chiefs look disinterested. I'm
The Chiefs were playing, hey, let's run on our toes. Let's make sure no one go for low hits. No one take each other out. Let's get in, get out, enjoy our week off. You want to play a team, to go back to it though, where the strength is the defense, because the Bills are a historic offense this year. The Bills and Josh Allen can score on anyone. I'm with you on that 100%. I don't think that's a hot take or anything. And if you are going to play against a team where it's like, hey, we want to play defense, keep it close, that to me is a recipe for success for the Bills, because the Bills are a bend don't break defense, you know, get the opportunistic turnover when they can. And then on top of it, they will capitalize with offensive play that is just historic at times. And that's a recipe where you need to have that offense on the other side, being able to go punch for punch with a Josh Allen led offense. Bo Nix, who's had a great year, who has even kind of opened up some eyes where people go, don't make sure you don't forget Bo Nix in the rookie of the year conversation, which valid, right? Like Jaden Daniels,
you can probably forget him.
Jaden Daniels is going to win. But
that's a whole other conversation, because we did just see a tight end like break every single rookie tight end record, and he's not even in consideration a year after Puka had the best rookie receiver season we've ever had and lost out to a quarterback who was good.
Yeah, right. No, that's all valid.
So Fox done.
Bo Nix has had a very good year. He's been very good. And I think he's benefited a lot from Sean Payton. And Sean Payton's benefited from having Bo Nix. But overall, they're not an offense that screams shootout to anyone. Tell me where it comes out of the backfield. You mentioned Cortland Sutton. Outside of Cortland Sutton and maybe a splash Mims play, where are they getting explosive plays from? It's going to take the Bills falling absolutely flat on their face like they did last season against the Broncos on Monday night, and then on top of it, still screwing it up with a game-winning field goal situation or whatever else to lose this game, because they are the ideal matchup. They are everything. Hey, Patrick Surtain's awesome. He may win Defensive Player of the Year. For my personal reasons, I really sure hope he doesn't, but he is phenomenal. You can easily take a Patrick Surtain out of the game. You can absolutely game plan it out. Just get him out of the game plan and do everything else perfectly fine. Oh, by the way, I don't even think Josh Allen cares that much anyways, because Josh Allen's just that damn good. We talked about the teams that were available and possible a few weeks ago. When you even looked at it going into this weekend, the Bengals were the only team where, hey, their defense was dog water. Like, it was terrible, but that doesn't matter. Joe Burrow is an MVP if they have, you know, four more wins on the season. Like, that's how good they were. Jamar Chase just won the Triple Crown, I'm pretty sure. Like, they can outshoot the Bills. And if that's the case, the Bills defense would have to somehow manufacture turnovers in order to even, you know, make sure the Bills can still operate and do things. But if the other side is able to just not turn the ball over and still be a high efficient offense, it's really last person, last team with the ball wins. And we saw that game already earlier this season, basically with the Rams, and the Bills fell short. That's how that happens. And that's the only scenario that this Bills team truly can lose a game where they still put out their A effort offensively and come up short. The Broncos aren't going to do that to you. The Dolphins definitely weren't going to do that to you with how they were sputtering and Tua's health was in question. But the Bengals were the only one that really kind of posed that threat. And thank you, Denver Broncos, for breaking that drought and making it to the playoffs. I hope you enjoy this like 2017 Bills fans did. And hey, you're coming to Orchard Park now. You broke your drought. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I hope it's not too premature to say enjoy this L that is most likely going to be going your way.
It's not Skylar Thompson. It's not Mason Rudolph, right? It's a step up from that. And, you know, Pro Ant from Cover One, who does fantastic work, Pro Ant on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, does have this out there on the Broncos defense, just to give you an idea of how good they are. Fourth in DVOA. This is just their defense. Fourth in DVOA, sixth versus the pass, second versus the rush. First in EPA per play, first in EPA per pass, first in EPA per rush. I mean, first is pretty good. Third in pressure rate, first in sacks, first in sack rate, second in blitz rate. Please blitz Josh Allen. Please. That is why you traded for Amari Cooper, by the way, because the Texans and the Ravens blitzed Josh Allen with no fear when they just played man coverage across the board. But I don't want to read his whole tweet because he has got really good stuff here. Go follow Pro Ant on Twitter, or you could just check our Twitter, Bills Chat Pod. I just retweeted it. He always has good nuggets, especially on the upcoming opponent. Sean McDermott, Luca, three of his playoff wins as Bills coach has come against Super Bowl winning head coaches. He's beaten Mike Tomlin, he's beaten John Harbaugh, and he's beaten Bill Belichick. He gets a chance at number four this weekend against Sean Payton, who won the Super Bowl back when he was the coach of the New Orleans Saints. And I think most of us probably agree that for this Bills team to win the ultimate prize this year, McDermott would have to at least make it five. And I think five is the only option. There are no championship coaches. Oh, McVay is alive. I guess they could play the Rams and in the NFC. So to make it five, they have to go through the Chiefs. Any concern about Sean Payton in this situation? I'll be honest with you. I'm not trying to poo-poo Sean Payton. I think he's a fine coach. I've never thought Sean Payton was an elite coach. I thought he had an elite run with Drew Brees where they were in lockstep. And I think that Sean Payton post Drew Brees has kind of just blended in. Now, he didn't crater like Belichick did, but I thought he didn't necessarily get the most out of Russell Wilson. They did come to Buffalo last year and beat the Bills in just a totally forgettable game. But I don't look at this situation like the Bills are up against a coaching mismatch. Do I think that the Bills have this massive coaching advantage? No, I don't. I think this is probably a pretty even coaching matchup. Do you view Sean Payton through a different lens than I do?
I think Sean Payton is a very good coach. I wouldn't give him the great label. I think Sean Payton won the Super Bowl, like you said, in lockstep with Drew Brees, plus. And the plus is he had a really, really nice defense with defensive coordinator Greg Williams. Like, they do not win that. And let me also put it this way. You also have a big set of balls if you come out and do the surprise onside kick like you do against the Peyton Manning Colts. And that sure helped as well. So it's one of those things where I think he understands. The one credit I will give him is he is very good at recognizing game flow and what needs to happen for success. He is a coach that knows football and how it operates in waves and understands game flow, as I just said, and just knows how to orchestrate things accordingly, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And you have to respect it. What I will end with is it kind of also feeds into the Bills' hands and McDermott's hands. The one thing McDermott's really good at outside of an Andy Reid or a Sean McVay, those elite play callers is if you're an offensive minded coach, it does feel like as long as you don't have that elite talent level and you're not an elite play caller that can truly just create confusion on your side, no matter what you do, Sean McDermott is, he can figure it out. He's cracked the code with the, you know, Mike McDaniel, Dolphins offenses. Like there's a reason that they always put up low numbers against McDermott compared to everyone else. And then on top of it all, I do think this Broncos team and Sean Payton doesn't quite eclipse where you're like, yeah, he's a great coach. Because when you really look at it, for instance, this season, they just beat the Chiefs 38-0. The previous week, they fell short to the Bengals we just talked about in Cincinnati. The week before that, they fell short to the Chargers in LA. They had a couple wins against the lowly Colts, the Browns, the Raiders, the Falcons. They lost to the Chiefs in that blocked field goal game everyone remembers. The week before that blocked field goal game, Josh, they got absolutely blown out by the Ravens in Baltimore. This is a team that seems to prey on the weak, but when they go up against the tough boys, the big boys, it does feel like they come up short. I mean, they lost to the Steelers early in the season. The only playoff team win they have outside of this anomaly that is week 18 against the Chiefs, if I'm looking back correctly and seeing all of this, is a week, what is that? Week 3 game at Tampa Bay 26-7. That's the only win they have this season against a playoff team. That is it. And there's always those teams, especially when you look at these 17 playoffs. The Dolphins obviously have been this for years past, where they beat the crap out of the little boys and then they just come up short against the big boys. And, you know, it's just good enough to squeak into that 7 seed. That's really what it is. The Broncos feel like that team where, hey, they can win 41-32 against the Browns at home. But all of a sudden you have to go to Baltimore or you got to go to Cincinnati. And Cincinnati's not even a playoff team, as we talked about, but obviously they've been pretty damn hot of late. And they come up short in those games because they're just not skilled enough. They're not good enough. And even a Super Bowl winning coach like Sean Payton is not quite good enough to elevate that team like a McVay, like an Andy Reid, in my opinion, to get it over the line a little bit more and turn that good team into a great team. So I think he's a very good coach. You don't win a Super Bowl because you're not a good coach, but overall, I wouldn't put him in that great category. And I would say McDermott, I feel like will have a confidence about him against Sean Payton, even with that loss that happened on Monday night last year, you know, kind of in the back of his head.
You know, they kind of remind me of the 2019 Bills that went to Houston and lost in the wild card round. As an aside, before I get into this 2019 Bills point, Luca, you're going to love this tweet. Adam Spolane from, he covers everything sports in Houston, Sports Radio 610, says, start time for every wild card game in Houston Texans history.
Yeah.
2011, Saturday, 3:30. 2012, Saturday, 3:30. I could go on and read this list, but the next 8 games are Saturday at 3:30.
Yep.
A tradition like no other is what he says.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's the 4:30 South time. 4:30 Eastern for anyone listening.
4:30 Eastern. Yeah, that's true. I guess he's in Houston, so that we'll give him a pass.
We'll give him the pass.
Yeah. He probably didn't think about Bill's chat podcast when he was making that tweet. The parallels are that Bills 2019 defense was excellent. I mean, you're talking about Tre'Davious White was an all pro cornerback that year. And that could be like your Patrick Surtain. The Bills had Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer both playing at their very best. You had Edmonds and Milano playing, you know, peak levels of their career. You know, you had the best version of Jordan Phillips who got close to double digit sacks that year. That Taron Johnson coming in, McDermott, Frazier. But the offense was, it was kind of hit or miss. Josh Allen was finding his way. He had some big games, but a lot of it was also make it up as you go. Like he hadn't turned the 2020 corner yet when they got Diggs. And like the offense all of a sudden opened up and it was like, this might be the best offense in the sport. It was, okay, this team can sometimes score 30 against bad teams. Or, you know, like the Dolphins were really bad that year. They go down to Miami and just pour it on the Dolphins. But in general, there would be a bit of you that would watch him play and be like, man, this is really cool. Oh, he's scrambling. Oh, this is going to be great. If you aren't watching on YouTube, I'm covering my face because it's like you're still kind of nervous. That's where I feel like the McDermott defense is just going to really be the perfect defense for this Broncos offense. Bo Nix has had a very good rookie season. Luca talked about it. When you factor in his stats today, he has 3,700 yards, 29 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Four of those touchdowns came today. 12 interceptions is a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you talk about what the Bills want to do, they are perfectly fine. I mean, they're trying to stop you, so don't misunderstand, but they're perfectly content with you on the other side of the field proving that you can go on 10, 12, 15 play drives without making a mistake, without having a holding penalty, without having an illegal block in the back, without having a receiver run the wrong route, without an incomplete pass, turnover, whatever. Prove to us you can execute 15 plays in a row and we'll let you get points. Bend but don't break. We talked about it after the Jets game a couple weeks ago. Bend but don't break was the perfect recipe for the Jets because they are just a joke right now. They are, I mean, they won today, but they are a circus. They're just waiting for their next mistake. That's not the Broncos, but you have a rookie quarterback in a very loud playoff environment, his first game against an experienced Sean McDermott defense that is fully manned. They're not missing anybody. And I think the Bills are going to be perfectly content to take away the deep bombs, the Cortland Sutton and Mims, and they're going to make the Broncos go the length of the field. And hey, if Bo Nix, if you can go 15 plays without making a mistake, get down to the red zone where things tighten up and find a way to get in the end zone, great. There's 7 points. Can you do that 5 times against us? Because then maybe you're going to beat us. That's the Bills recipe. I like a lot about that. And that's where the Joe Burrow fear factor for me really was, is I think Joe Burrow would have been perfectly happy in those situations. I will gladly go on 15 play drives. And by the way, you can bend and don't break, but I have this guy, Jamar Chase, that can break any defense.
Yeah.
So good luck. And by the way, T. Higgins, when he's covered, he's still kind of open. So that's where I just feel like that's where this matchup is ideal. It's going to be one on Josh Allen to carry over what we saw in the regular season, an MVP level regular season, not to turn the ball over. We saw that in the Broncos game last year where he started off turning the ball over multiple times in the first quarter. That's one way they could lose this game. Don't make any foolish plays. Don't make this game easy on Bo Nix. And then obviously all the cliches fit in. Start fast, make Bo Nix play from behind, get the pass rush going with Groot and Von Miller. And then I think that's a recipe for success for the Bills. Sitting here today, Luca, my ultimate prediction for this game, I'm not going to give you a score prediction, but just the read I have on it, because we have something planned later this week where we're going to really break down this game in more detail. We're just kind of like peeking at this game right now. I feel like this is going to be the kind of game where the Bills win. The game isn't a blowout, but it never really feels threatening. It's one of those games like you're watching it, and from about halftime on, you're comfortable, but you kind of in the back of your mind think, if a couple plays go against us, it could become a game again. And then maybe by the end of the game, it's a one score game because of a backdoor cover or whatever, but you're never really nervous. That's where I feel like this game's going to land.
It feels like what you're describing is that Skylar Thompson, Miami Dolphins wildcard game, Josh. Yeah. I could see that. I can absolutely see kind of that outcome for this game. I can also, my feel on it is really going to be one where I can see this being one where the Bills might even, I don't want to say come out flat. I don't want it to be any negative, but almost come out reserved. Like they're not trying to just go guns a blazing on this one, whether that's for reasons of maybe having one eye looking ahead already. Remember, and I know you put out a tweet, Josh, where it was effectively, hey, we'll already know by kickoff, or even before kickoff, of course, who what the next path would be if we were to come out with a win. So I'm not saying that they would necessarily be doing that, but for that reason, for, you know, just the fact that they're trying to get their feet wet and get the game going, whatever it is, come out a little bit of flat. And then it kind of keeps Denver around where they're kind of building confidence, but they're just also trying to feel out a playoff game. It's been a long time. None of those players on that roster, I do believe for the most part, have been in that kind of experience where it's a tight game. And then eventually a few plays will happen, right? A few Josh Allen MVP like plays, a few James Cook splash runs, whatever it might be, a bomb to Keon Coleman and or Amari Cooper, whatever it is will eventually happen that kind of finally cracks cracks the door open, and then eventually they blow that door open off its hinges, and eventually the Bills will find themselves getting it to a two-score game mid fourth quarter. It feels like it's got that script for it, like we've seen a lot in the mid regular season games against those kind of, I don't want to call them second rate, but for lack of a better term, a second rate team, where you're really just trying to like start the game easy, a little bit timid and or kind of rigid, and just get through the motions at that time. And both sides are kind of just in a deadlock one score game where it's nothing pretty whatsoever. And then finally those splash plays happen and the door's blown off. Next thing you know, the team's kind of chasing it on the other side there, and the Bills are able to kind of comfortably do their thing and get through that game, hopefully healthy. And overall, you know, again, like you said, not giving score predictions here, but ultimately it's really, really very difficult for myself to see, unless the Bills do something like we saw in the Monday night game last year against the same team, where they absolutely shoot themselves in the foot five times. It feels like I don't see a result that is anything other than the Bills win. It's very, very difficult. Covering a point spread is one thing that it's not like I'm confident sitting here. I may have finished just barely in the positive on Luka's locks this season, but overall, yeah, I wouldn't begin to know. It's the NFL playoffs here. Right now we're sitting at it where it's Bills -7.5. It opened up at Bills -8.5. Who knows? Like, ultimately, like you mentioned, that Skylar Thompson game, backdoor covers happen all the time. These teams, as you mentioned earlier this year, get to the playoffs because they're still pretty good teams. Like, you're not the seven seed in the NFL playoffs because you're some chump that, you know, the NFL wanted to give charity to and let you in there and, hey, have a fun time being in the playoffs for one game. It's like, no, they deserve to be there. They earn the right to be there. So we'll see how it goes, but it's very difficult for me to see anything other than a Bills win when, you know, that 1 o'clock game on Sunday ends.
So we're not going to do game balls and game checks for this game. Just, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I want to give an honorary game ball to Sean McDermott. I thought he handled the game very smartly today, with not only sitting important players, but making sure that guys in that locker room hit their incentives. I think Sean McDermott's had a really good year. You know, there's been some hiccups. Every coach has them, but been a really good year. Luka, how much pressure is on the Bills next week? And I ask that because the last time they were on the field in a playoff game, they had the Chiefs loss, and their last two playoff runs have come to end at home. And I look at it as, I don't believe the pressure starts next week. I think this Bills team probably starts to feel the pressure when they get to that round two again, where their season has ended three times in a row now, twice in a row in their own stadium. That's to me where the pressure gets ratcheted up, and it's playoffs. You're not going to avoid pressure, but how much do you worry about this Bills team coming in tight, coming in afraid to make mistakes? Or do you think that this is a kind of team that's going to be able to, in a playoff setting, carry over a lot of what they've done in the regular season, which is play cool? We saw it the very first game of the year. They fall behind big to the Cardinals. No problem. We'll work our way back. Professional win. We've seen it multiple times out of this team. Where do you land on the pressure on this team and their ability to carry that over into the playoffs?
Two things. One, I even kind of talked about it. I absolutely can see it where it's not necessarily eyes looking forward, and it's not necessarily a negative being rigid, but they're in their professionalism and the way they're going to approach this game. It does feel like there is that potential to be a slow start. And there's nothing wrong with that in my eyes. I think that's something that this team has kind of done, for lack of a better term, strategically, almost intentionally. You know, it feels like something where they have an idea where it's almost like they want the game to come to them, mm-hmm. and they want to see what kind of fight are we in here? You know, look at, for example, you can look at two different games here, even during this MVP stretch, Josh, where you had the Rams game, and then you also had the Niners game is kind of a hard one because obviously the weather played a massive factor in it. But if you go before that, the Chiefs game, and there are two games where an MVP moment happened for Josh Allen, and there's really nothing you can come out of that game where you're really complaining about it, even though we won one and we lost one. What I will say is both those games had a little bit of a weird start to them, and weird in the sense of it was slow. It almost felt like both sides of the ball were just trying to understand what's going on in the game right now. What kind of game are we getting ourselves into? Is this going to be an offensive shootout? Is this going to be kind of a chess match of a game? And then ultimately, you figured out what it is. The Chiefs game for a while really felt like that chess game, right? You know, field position at times, get a score here. Can we make it a two-score game here? What can we do? How do we play? Think about what the opposition's trying to do so you can always be two steps ahead. The Rams game instantly after a couple drives felt like, holy shit, we just need to score every drive. Like, buckle up. Hey, Allen, go to your locker. Go grab that cape. We need it, buddy. Just start putting points on the board. And they are capable of playing all of those different games. So what I'm going to say for myself, and then for anyone else that even cares what my opinion is, two things have been very true about this Bills team. One, I think McDermott defenses are very known around the league. And don't be surprised if the game plan for the other side's offense is successful early during those oh-so-infamous scripted plays. I think that's pretty well apparent. If you haven't figured that out by now, I could absolutely forecast, for instance, Sean Payton devising a perfect 15-play game plan to open up the game against the Bills with their first offensive drive. And two, I will not be panicking one bit. I will not be concerned until the second half of a game. That is absolute truth. I will be sitting there by halftime, still understanding that Josh Allen's coming out of that tunnel. Hopefully, you know, obviously there's things that we don't even want to discuss that are possible, but Josh Allen will be hopefully coming out of that tunnel, and he will still be taking snaps, and he is capable of doing anything. And this team understands what they're doing. And the coaching staff is very good at making halftime adjustments, regardless of how the first half goes, regardless how you're opening a couple drives on both sides of the ball go. This team is built for halftime adjustments and understanding game flow and are very professional about it and are capable of being successful in all different styles of games. So regardless of what kind of game you're in, the Baltimore and Houston games earlier this season even feel like distant memories, because what we've seen now, what this team as it is in its full form here today, feels like one that I don't care what's across the field. When the 60 minutes go, I am confident that there's a better, more likely chance that this Bills team won, however the game needed to be, you know, when it comes to a style, whether it's a shootout, whether it's a chess game, whether it's a defensive, you know, bloodbath, whatever it is, this team feels capable of doing that and winning and being successful in that style. So realistically, I go into this playoffs not thinking it has to be this in order for us to win. I do believe that because of Josh Allen in its current form, this offense in its current form, and then really McDermott and everyone else being so battle tested at this point, that my expectations are simply put to not overreact, not even think twice about anything that happens early on and feel like the world is ending already if things are going wrong, because I truly believe this team is so battle tested and has been there and done it so many times and has proven that they can win it in a variety of ways, that there's zero reason to think that you know, it's not going to happen again this time. There is always a chance when you have 17 under center and this coaching staff is doing its thing. They have proven time and time again that they know what it takes and they've been around and done it.
Yeah. I'm not overly worried. I feel like this is a team that's ready for the moment. And now could come back to bite me. It's the playoffs. It's a funny sport. You know, that is the tricky thing about the NFL, is it is a one and done scenario. It's a funny sport. All it takes is a fumble or a missed kick or somebody slipping. You just never know. Let's talk about the other game that I think is going to be the obsession of Bills fans. It's the one that takes place. It's one of the two that takes place before the Bills and Broncos play. Ravens and Steelers. We're going to get into this one and the Bills Broncos much more in depth on a special show we have coming early next week. This week, Sunday's the start of the week, Josh, before the game. But I do think it's interesting when we talk about pressure, because Lamar Jackson, fairly or not, His reputation is a guy that does not perform in the playoffs. And he had a good game against Houston, but otherwise his playoff resume is very disappointing. And his last chance to take the field was an ultimate egg against the Chiefs, losing at home in the AFC Championship game. So now they're going to take the field against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Saturday night. And I hated this matchup at first. I wanted it to be the Chargers, but the more I think about it, Luca, the more I think this Steelers matchup might be perfect. It's a team the world expects them to blow out. If the Chargers are going to Baltimore, it's a fun game. Like, people are going to pick the Ravens to win, but you're ready to buckle up and watch some football. The national tone right now on this Ravens-Steelers game is, why did you put that game on Saturday night? That should have been any other game. This game's going to be a blowout. Perfect. Perfect. Put those expectations on the Ravens. Let's see how they handle it. They're going against a Mike Tomlin defense that has seen Lamar Jackson more than a dozen times. And they're going against a Pittsburgh defense that historically does great against Lamar Jackson. And they're going against a Pittsburgh team that, yes, they limped into the playoffs, but some of that can be freeing. There's no pressure on them. If they go out there and lose by 40, it's what everybody expects out of them. There's a lot about this matchup that I think, Luca, if the Steelers were to ever get off to a hot start, it could get really tight in that building real quick.
I think that's a valid point. There's always that classic thing where you don't want to see a divisional opponent in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That's a classic thought process, and familiarity is the reason why, right? And historically, up until that, was it Christmas weekend? I feel like it was Christmas weekend. Christmas weekend game. The Saturday, they had to play Saturday because it was Ravens Steelers in order to facilitate the short week going into Christmas. So the weekend before Christmas when they played, it was one of those games where ultimately the Steelers fell short and Lamar finally had a great performance. And that was the first time really Lamar found success against the Steelers. That's one where you would like to think if all of the expectations and pressure is on the Ravens, I do think Mike Tomlin's probably sharing a brain like you. Perfect. Let's walk into Baltimore and be successful like I have been before, right? In years past. There is plenty of history to show that Mike Tomlin's been successful in Baltimore. It's a different team. It's a different person at quarterback, and the defense, as great as it is in certain areas, like TJ Watt, of course, and Cameron Hayward, I do think that secondary is a little suspect, but it's not exactly like the Ravens are, you know, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins out wide. They are Zay Flowers, Pro Bowl receiver Zay Flowers, and Rashad Bateman. You would like to think that they'd be able to at least mitigate things.
And no Flowers this week.
Yeah.
You're good.
The big thing that it comes to the pressure that all eyes will be on, and Amazon Prime is probably so ecstatic about, is simply put, Lamar Jackson has all of the pressure on him right now to perform in that game. And if there's one opponent that I feel like Lamar Jackson probably wouldn't want to be seen right now, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, because in the back of his head, he's probably remembering all of those times where he's cut out short. He even came up short and really had a poor performance earlier this season in Pittsburgh. And it's, as we keep talking about, it's a familiar opponent. And with all of those weight and expectations on him, we've seen it in the past in the playoffs where he falls short. It would be incredible and amazing if for some reason the Pittsburgh Steelers, led by Mike Tomlin, go into Baltimore and give us a game. That would be remarkable. I don't expect it. In reality, it's probably not going to happen. But if there was a situation that honestly you would like to see the Ravens have to get through in order to face off against the Bills, who hopefully we, of course, are going to see win on Sunday against the Broncos, you got to go through a familiar foe being the Pittsburgh Steelers. Whereas if it was against the Chargers, I think, as you put it very well, does it feel like they would probably have a better chance to beat the Ravens? Absolutely. But ultimately, it doesn't feel like it would have as much weight to it when it comes to the expectations on the Ravens in that game and it would really just be a kind of Amazon Prime really definitely wishes that, you know, the Chargers were playing at the Ravens and they had that game rather than the alternative. But ultimately, it would just have been a fun game for a football fan to enjoy. And this will be a true test of if Lamar is built different this season compared to years last, because when you really look at it, last year he won the MVP. They're the one seed. They get rookie CJ Stroud coming to town. It was still kind of a game. Eventually they pull away late, but ultimately the only game that they were truly tested in with Lamar, they came up short at home against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. In years past, we've seen them come up short against the Titans at home, or I can't think of another one. Like Lamar, the Chargers. Thank you. Chargers. They came to Buffalo in 2020 and Lamar could really do nothing. And the only drive they had success ended in a beautiful moment for the Bills organization in a Taron Johnson pick six. And then unfortunately for Lamar, he got hurt. He was out. Snoop Huntley had to come in. I believe it was Snoop Huntley at the time. And it got ugly for them. Lamar has a long track record of unfortunately falling short, something that hopefully and not hopefully, you know, however you want to word it, will be discussed about the Bills if they were to somehow track their way to playing the Chiefs again, right? The conversation around the Ravens and Lamar is simply this. You have the weight of the world on your shoulders now where you are expected to win this game and you need to win it big against a familiar foe of the Steelers. Mike Tomlin, one time, for everyone that isn't a Baltimore Ravens fan, just do it. Just please, for the love of God, do it. We will be with you waving terrible towels, rooting on the Steelers in Baltimore.
Russell Wilson one time, remember how to play football. My goodness, it has been bad. We shall see. It'll be interesting. All right, Luca, we don't know the exact timing of it yet, but we are very confident we're going to have a show that comes out before this Bills-Broncos playoff game. We are now into the money games. Everything that has happened now does not matter anymore. The records reset. The Bills went 13-4 in the regular season. All that matters is they get a home game this week. If they win, they get another home game next week, and then we will see what happens after that. But it's playoff time. We know with these Bills that this is really what matters. Regular season stuff is great. Josh Allen winning MVP potentially is great, but these next four, hopefully, games are what really define success or failure for this team, and it starts on Sunday with the Denver Broncos. Luca, any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I will say congrats to the Detroit Lions, assuming no miracles happen here as we're recording. There's only 5 minutes left in this game. Congrats on the one seed, their highest seed ever as a franchise. That's a remarkable thing. Mm-hmm. I believe I saw it where last time they were as high as two and they had a bye week. They fell short against the Washington at the time Redskins in 91, who mm-hmm. ultimately went to the Super Bowl to play your Buffalo Bills. So I wasn't even born yet, for one. And two,
I was.
And two, if history were to repeat somewhat, it would be nice for that AFC opposition the last time the Lions had a bye to be the AFC representative in the Super Bowl. Let's see. And thank God we don't have to wait anymore, Josh. We are here. The best time of the year as a football fan is here. We are in the playoffs. We made it.
I'm excited. It all starts next week. And next week, Luca and I will be back to break it all down after the Bills, hopefully, knock on wood, beat the Broncos and advance to the divisional round. If the Bills win this game, by the way, they will have made it to the divisional round now 5 years in a row, which is a record that is tied, an active record that only they and the Chiefs have. The Chiefs have already made it by way of having the bye. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. The Bills are in the playoffs. It starts next week. We will talk to you next week on Bills Talk.